Last night as I was collecting some ribs off the smoker, I put them on the stove and I looked up and lo and behold, there was a frog on my stove. I was pretty surprised. Heather had taken some pictures of a frog that was on our door, and when I opened the door, apparently he liked the warmth inside and jumped in and landed on the stove, and I was able to get him out. It was a big surprise. I'm here to say this morning that our lesson is on a dysfunctional family that we find in Scriptures. I'm also here to say that if we find a dysfunctional family, we should not be surprised at it. We've fostered that in our homes. We've allowed it to happen. We've talked about having godly families and how it takes much work. Don't do that work, and this is what you end up with. Eli. We study the life of Eli, we begin to see much disappointment in his life. No doubt as his sons were born, Eli probably had a lot of visions in his mind. What his children would do in the future. How they would aid him in the sacrifices to God. And eventually how they might even take over his position. There was probably much hope in the eyes of Eli when his sons were born. You as parents, think back when your children were born. What was the first thought that came to your mind when you locked eyes with that little girl or that little boy? What thoughts did you have? What ran through your mind? I know one of the thoughts that came to my mind very quickly when I laid hold of Kaylin was, my God is awesome. He is an awesome God. And that feeling grew after child, after child, after child. I'll be honest with you, at first there were no thoughts about what my child would do, what they would become. All I thought about was how good God truly was and how He has blessed us. As time goes on and we begin to watch our children and them function and move around, we then begin to think about that. What will happen to my sons? Partook in a funeral yesterday, and Tristan is always very in tune with what I'm doing. He watches me. He studies with me. He studies me. He was very quick to grab my Bible, and he stood beside me. He watched how I shook people's hands and how I hugged on different people. I don't know what his future holds, but there are thoughts. And I know there are thoughts with you. Desires and hopes. And if you're here as a parent, I know as you think about your child, you're thinking about that day in the future when they will proclaim to a group, I believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of the living God. And you long for that day for your child to be baptized, to be washed in the blood of Jesus Christ, to have their sins washed away, and enter into that wonderful relationship of them being your brother or sister in Christ. We think much of the future. Our hopes and our desires of what our kids will do and what they will become. And if not careful, we forget about the work that needs to be done in between that hope and desire of what they will become and where they are now. How you doing when it comes to raising your children? I want to start with looking at a couple of verses this morning in 1 Timothy chapter 5. 1 Timothy chapter 5. God has given specific roles to the family. He's given specific roles to the father. He has given specific roles to the mothers. And He's given specific roles to the children. And one thing that I've come to appreciate over time, as I've watched families fall apart, and as I've watched families knit together, there is one thing that becomes very, very evident, and you've probably seen it yourself. When we get these roles out of whack, when we begin to do things and commit ourselves and long for another position or another responsibility in the family, we begin to see the deterioration of the family. One has said, and I believe it, the way of the family is the way of the nation, and I believe that. We fail in our responsibilities at home, then we fail our nation, and far above that, we fail our God in heaven. In 1 Timothy chapter 5 and verse 8, it teaches us this as fathers. What is our responsibility? What is our God-given role? What is our responsibility as a father? In 1 Timothy chapter 5 and verse 8, it says this, "But if anyone does not provide for his own, especially for those of his own household, he is denied the faith and he is worse than an infidel." You look at Ephesians chapter 5. Let's turn over there. Ephesians chapter 5 and in verse 25. "Husbands, love your wives as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for her." Ephesians chapter 6, then in verse 4. "And you fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the training and admonition of the Lord." Fathers, our responsibility in the home is to be the spiritual providers, to provide for our families, and be the protectors of the home. That is our responsibility. So if our family is moving in this direction, if our family is moving into a dysfunctional family, which we'll study about this week and next, whose fault is it? It's not society's fault, that's for sure. Society has an impact, and make for sure that if we as fathers give an opportunity, society will kick that door down. But it is our responsibility. It falls squarely on our shoulders as fathers in the home to be the spiritual leaders, the providers, and the protectors. That's what scriptures reveal to us. What about mothers? What's your responsibility? We'd be amiss if we didn't look for at least a moment at Proverbs 31. Let's turn over there for just a second. The individual that says that his wife must remain and stay in the home does not understand much. Does not understand much about a woman or her responsibilities. In Proverbs 31, it gives us this wonderful picture of this virtuous wife and how she provides for her home, how she stays up late at night to make sure that the next day runs very smoothly. And this is above all the other responsibilities in the home. It says in verse 10 of Proverbs 31, "Who can find a virtuous wife? For her worth is far above rubies. The heart of her husband safely trusts her, so that he will have no lack of gain." You young men, listen very intently to Proverbs 31. This is the woman you should be looking for. Beauty only goes so far, and at the end of the day, when the lights are out, you see nothing but thoughts. Can you confidently say that you are somebody that can trust your wife? Look for this type of woman. It goes on and says this, "She does him good and not evil all of the days of her life. As long as she lives, her desire is for her husband. She longs to do him good. Thinks no evil. Removes as much evil as possible out of their lives." Goes on to say about her active nature, "She seeks wool and flax and willingly works with her hands. She is like a merchant ship. She brings her food from afar. She also raises while it is still night. She rises while it's still night and provides food for her household and a portion for her maidservants. She considers a field and buys it, and from her profit she plants a vineyard. She girds herself with strength and strengthens her arms. She perceives that her merchandise is good, and her lamp does not go out by night. She stretches out her hands to the staff, and her hand holds her spindle. She extends her hand to the poor. Yes, she reaches out her hand to the needy. She is not afraid of the snow for her household, for all her household is clothed with scarlet. She makes tapestry for herself. Her clothing is fine linen and purple. Her husband is known in the gates, and when he sits among the elders of the land, she makes linen garments and sells them. She supplies sashes for the merchants. Strength and honor are her clothing. She shall rejoice in time to come. She opens her mouth with wisdom, and on her tongue is the law of kindness. Young man, listen up. She watches over the ways of her house and does not eat the bread of idleness. Her children rise up and call her blessed. Her husband also, and he praises her. Many daughters have done well, but you exceed them all. Charm is deceitful, and beauty is passing. But the woman who fears the Lord, she shall be praised. How do you think about that? You look at Titus chapter 2 and verses 4 and 5 and how the older women are to teach the younger women. What is the woman's responsibility? Her responsibility is to provide in the home, to have tender affection towards her children and her husband. She is to love and supply the needs for her family and her home. But when we limit it to just that, we miss so much of Proverbs 31. Her primary responsibility is the home, and she excels in the home. And her family is blessed because of a mother who takes care of her responsibilities at home first. What about his parents? We know that when we look into Deuteronomy chapter 17, and as we'll look at a dysfunctional family this morning, as parents, it's our responsibility to set the rules and to enforce the rules, to set discipline, to set the rules and to supply discipline when discipline is needed. The children's responsibility is to respect the parental authorities. To sum it up, when we are active and involved in fulfilling our roles and responsibilities in the home, great and wonderful things will happen. When we ignore these, troubles come. We want a strong family? Do what God says for you to do. Put away the self-help books. Put away all the opinions and thoughts of your friends and commit yourself to God wholeheartedly in doing what God has commanded you to do as a husband and as a wife and as a child in the home. God has set the ideal standard. Who are we to bicker and argue about it? You listening this morning? I hope you are. Because I know there's not one of us this morning that wants to have a dysfunctional family. I know there's not one of us this morning who are here and are listening to these words that desire what happened to Eli and his family to happen to our family. So wives, nudge your husbands. Make sure they're paying attention this morning. Husbands, nudge your wives. Make sure your children, flick them, do whatever you have to do to get their attention. But make sure that they are paying attention this morning. This is important. We're seeing it all around us, the destruction and the devastation that is happening in home to home. And we'd like to say that's in the world, but it is happening amongst God's people today. God is not happy. We want to give God the glory and honor that He's so richly deserving of. Then be the husband who God has called you to be. Be the wife who God has called you to be. You ignore His ways and selfishly seek your own. Before too long, if not already, your family will begin to fall apart. Let's talk about Eli for just a moment this morning. In 1 Samuel chapter 1, we're going to spend some time, like I said, this morning and next week, looking at 1 Samuel in these three chapters. And my hope and desire is that we'll come to appreciate the mistakes that Eli made. Look at some of the good things that he did, but pay attention very closely to the mistakes that Eli made, so that we ourselves don't walk down that path ourselves. Holding that little one and expecting so much out of this little one, but yet failing to do what God has told us to do, and we raise up our children and they rebel, and they rebel not only against us, but against God, and ultimately lose their soul in hell. Which one of us wants that for our children? I know I don't. And I know it's a rhetorical question. I know that you don't. But we can want and wish all day long. What will we commit ourselves to? That's the real question. What will we commit ourselves to? It's a kind of interesting when you study the life of Eli, the mother of his children is never mentioned. I don't know why that is, but that is the fact. We know Eli is mentioned. And we know that Eli had two hats. One, he served for 40 years as the high priest, and he also served as judge. Two hats. And really, we can put three hats in there, because he also had that hat as a father. And because Eli held these influential positions, we know that his family was well known amongst the people. What could we say about that? Really, at the end of the day, we could say all eyes were very much focused on Eli and his family. I know one older preacher, he gave me some advice when I decided I was going to preach. He said, "Neil, when your kids come, don't get caught up with all the eyes staring at your family. Raise them as kids." A lot of preachers mess up with that. They think their kids need to be better than all the rest. And I've come to appreciate that in life as I've watched other preachers raise their children and what they've done and how they've treated their children. Eli was well known amongst the people. Everyone knew who Eli was, and rest assured, everybody knew who Eli's sons were. We also find out about Eli early in chapter 2 that he was aged, he was losing his sight, and he had become drastically overweight. These are things that are noted about Eli. He had lost control, as we'll find out, not only over his children as they advanced in years, but he had lost control of himself as well. He had lost his way. Ophni and Phinehas are his sons, following in their father's footsteps. They served as priests. But it's interesting when we study about them, and I would urge you to go home before next week and go ahead and read 1 Samuel chapter 1 through chapter 3 and see some of the disappointments that happened. Some of the wishful thinking and some of the bad decisions that were made. These two young men who were serving as priests They lacked moral character. And it's interesting what Scriptures reveals to us. In 1 Samuel chapter 2, in verse 12, this is what it says about Eli, about his sons. Now the sons of Eli were worthless men. They did not know the Lord. Now wait a minute. Is it possible to serve as priest and not know the Lord? Everybody shake our heads. Yes. That's what's happening here. You have two men that are serving as priests who do not know the Lord. Let me ask you a question. Is it possible for a preacher to be a phony? Yes, absolutely. It's just as possible as a Christian to be a phony as well. We can claim all day long that we are something. Maybe do some of the acts that provide others to think that we are that person. But in reality, we are somebody completely different. That doesn't even sum up Eli's sons. They were bad. And they didn't hide it. And they would come to the temple and serve as a priest, but were as crooked as could be. In chapter 2, in verses 13 through 15, it describes more of what his sons were involved with. And the priest's custom with the people was that when any man offered a sacrifice, the priest's servant would come with a three-pronged fish hook in his hand while the meat was boiling. And he would thrust it into the pan, or the kettle, or the cauldron, or the pot. And the priest would take for himself all that the fish hook brought up. So they did. And it's interesting. As I was last night cooking some pulled pork, I started with a butt. And you can get the fork in there. And you can maneuver it and put it where you want to go. But after it's cooked for a long period of time, you can put the forks in the side where they once were and try to pick it up, but what's going to happen? All of that meat is going to fall apart. And so what his sons were doing is they were going in before the meat was cooked, they were taking that fish hook and sticking it in there and bringing out more than they needed. They weren't waiting till the meat cooked. You know, I could wait till the pulled pork is cooked, the butt's cooked, and go in there and try to get a forkful, and that's all I'm going to come out with. But they were going in before it was cooked, before the meat was finished, and using this fish hook and pulling out much more than they should have. And if anyone tried to stop them, verse 16 says that they would take it by force. A priest would take it by force. Chapter 2 and verse 17 teaches us that they were irreverent. Verse 22 teaches us they were immoral. And verse 25 would teach us that they were rebellious. Now think about this for just a second. They're the sons of Eli. How long did Eli serve as priest and judge? 40 years. You would think that a man that would serve in this position would have sons that would be faithful to God. That he would have godly children. Ones that would serve in the position of priest wholeheartedly. But what we come to find out is that raising godly children, it just doesn't happen. I'd like to say, because I'm a gospel preacher, I'm going to have 5 Christians down the road. 5 dedicated Christians who are going to commit themselves wholeheartedly to the Lord. That I will have 2 evangelists that will come from my bloodline. That I will have 3 young girls that will marry eventually elders of the truth. I would like to believe that all day long. But just because I hold the title of evangelist doesn't automatically mean that my children will be faithful. Hopefully we realize that. Maybe that's where Eli went wrong in the process of his thinking and in his raising of his children. Maybe he felt like, I'm a priest. I'm a judge. I've done so for 40 years. My children will be faithful. But that's not how it worked out. Not even close. I'm going to close with this slide this morning. The adopted son of Eli. That was Samuel. Most of us are very familiar. That's why I told you, if you're not, go home, read 1 Samuel chapter 1 and chapter 2 and chapter 3, and you'll get the whole picture here. Hannah comes into the picture. She's not with child. She offers this heartfelt prayer that's a beautiful prayer to her God. And God answers this prayer. And Samuel is born to Hannah. And she makes a promise before she gets pregnant that if God gives her a child, she will give him to the Lord. So a child is born. Samuel is born. And she places this boy, who she longed for so much, into a foster home with Eli to grow up where he would serve the Lord. Now think about this for just a second. If you were going to die, you and your husband, and you had no family members to provide for your children, who would you send them to? Who would you send them to? If you're going through the process like I did a few nights ago, you probably started thinking, who is faithful to God? Hopefully that would be your main desire. Not your best friend who you chummed around with in high school and maybe played sports with. Hopefully you're thinking in your mind, if I'm dying, no family members are around, my biggest important factor in my kids going to some home is that they are God-fearing parents. Now you think about Hannah for just a second. She sends Samuel, a toddler, to go to the house of Eli and to live with him. Samuel grew up in a dysfunctional family. You would have thought that young Samuel, a little toddler, going into that atmosphere, would have turned out like the other two. Rebellious, unloving towards God, and disrespectful to his parents. But see, when we look at 1 Samuel, I'll close with this verse. When we look at 1 Samuel in chapter 3 and in verse 19, it states this: so Samuel grew, and the Lord was with him, and let his words fall to the ground. When we look at this and we think about this verse, Samuel's in a dysfunctional family. Corruption is all around him. But Samuel grew, and the Lord was with Samuel. I want to say this morning that if you are attending with us and you come from a dysfunctional family, you are in a dysfunctional family, don't lose hope. If God could pull Samuel out of this awful situation and make him who he was, can he not do the same today? And I also want to say, parents, if you find yourself as parents of a dysfunctional family, don't give up. Commit yourself to understanding that your family is dysfunctional. It's not functioning as God wants it to function. And then commit yourself to finding out how to fix it. Sad reality of it is that many of us will follow in the footprints of our parents. You're in a dysfunctional family now. Chances are, before too long, if you put forth no effort, before too long, that's the type of family you'll have as well. Parents, it's never too late. Teach your children there is a right way to serve God and a wrong way. Go home with your children this week. Read 1 Samuel chapter 1 through chapter 3. Talk about what happened in those chapters. Talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly. And talk about where you're lacking, where you're doing good as a family. Increase where you're doing good. The things that need to change, commit yourself to changing those things as a family. Fathers, you be the providers. But understand, you can't be absent from the home and expect your children to grow up and fear God. If you're out of the picture, a big piece is missing out of that picture. It might mean you have to go without some things. It might mean you might not be able to do some things that you want to do. But sacrifice those things to be with your family. Be the provider, but be with your family. One of the responsibilities is you have the task to provide the spiritual nourishment in your family. Are you doing that? Not change it. You as a wife, we talked about your responsibilities. Are you doing that? If not, change that. It's not too late. You're still breathing. Change it. And hopefully your children will see it. And they'll welcome those changes. And commit those good things to their families as well when they get married. I know we've not talked much about making your life right with God. As far as an individual this morning. I would say this morning that if you want to sit down and study about becoming a child of God, about getting your life on track yourself before you involve anybody else, I will do that today. I will help you. If I can't do it, there's other men, there's other women in this group that will sit down and study with you and teach you about God's way in hopes that you will become a child of God. Maybe you're here this morning and it's time for you to obey the gospel. You know what you need to do, but you're holding on for some reason from obeying God. I hope this morning, as we talked a little bit about Eli and the mistakes that he made with his children and the choices that his children made, and we haven't even got to the bad part yet where God takes vengeance on his sons and they die in that awful state that they were in, rebellious to God. If you are here and you are not a child of God and you know what you need to do and you're at that age of accountability, you are demonstrating rebellion against your God. It's time for you to get that right with Him. The front seats are wide open this morning. Maybe you don't feel comfortable coming to the front. Raise your hand. I will come to you. Make that good confession this morning that you believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of the living God. And commit yourself from turning from the direction that you're going in and start serving God with all of your heart. Part of it will not do. You've tried it. You can't go to heaven just being a good moral person. You've got to be baptized. And we hope that you'll do that this morning. If you're here and you're a child of God and you're not living as you ought to, maybe your family is crumbling around you this morning, ask God for help. Ask Him for forgiveness where you have lacked and commit yourself to doing better. And if you'd like us to pray with you this morning with whatever shortcoming you have as a child of God, we will do so with tender and humble hearts. But you have to make your request be made known. While we stand and sing, won't you do that?